Gail, a couple of people have checked in.
Did you want me to do roll call?
Yeah, let's do roll call.
Okay. Dr. Sadluck?
Here.
Dr. Popiel?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts? Ms. Gallen? Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt? Dr. Rubin?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts? We have quorum.
At 12:33 at the Naturopathic Medical Board meeting, like the brief moment introduced from the Attorney General's office.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? Who made the first motion, please? Okay. And who seconded, please? Okay. And Dr. Sadluck?
Yes,
okay. Did you want me to do roll call?
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Sadluck?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
I abstain.
Ms. Tibbetts? Motion carries.
Number five. I think the easiest way with number five, we have A, B, C, and D. Let me find out. I will ask individuals if they have legal representation. So let me start with Dr. Morris. Dr. Morris, do you have legal representation?
No, I do not.
Okay. Dr. Do you have legal?
Christina Happy, yes, she does have legal representation.
Okay, I see. Christy Anderson and Dr. Anderson, do you have representation?
This is Stephanie, yes, Dr. Anderson does have representation.
Okay. Okay. And then Jordan Apsio, do you have all legal representation?
No,
I don't. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and let me move on to 5C. And then we're going to move on to 5D as a boy. And then we'll get Dr. Morris. And then we'll do Dr. Raphael. So with that, the case number 20. -160. We'll take case number 20173 and that will be Dr. Christy Anderson's initial review. That was you, you Mr. King, your counsel?
Yes. And I would like Ms. or Dr. Anderson to give a brief statement to the board.
All right, let me have Ms. Anthony give a quick overview to the board, and then I have Dr. Anderson go ahead and give a review.
Okay. This is Dr. Helpio. I am recusing myself from this case. I did not fill out the paperwork. I apologize.
Okay. So let me know on call 37, case number 2173
says Dr. Helpio has recused on Dr. Anderson's case. And Dr. Helpio, I'm the
Yes, sir, a friend of mine and we've worked together in the past.
Thank you.
Okay.
Dr.
Yes. The State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a complaint from JLA, a former employee and patient of Consental Wellness of the Office of Dr. Christy Anderson. JLA alleges respondent was negligent in her care, that respondent did not call EMS services for her after she collapsed into unconsciousness and nearly died. JLA also alleges respondent conducts medical research on human subjects without informed consent. Additionally, JLA alleges respondent allowed her husband to practice medicine without a license. Respondent participated in a hostile work environment. Respondent's husband is abusive. Respondent failed to provide her with her final paycheck. And respondent allowed her husband to conduct research on her.
Okay, is she complaining on the line?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll hear from you in a little bit, but I'm going to get Dr. Anderson and then so Dr. Anderson.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. JLA underwent one UVBI with ozone treatment on May 29, 2020. JLA had no complaints immediately after the treatment or indeed or weeks following the procedure. Then on June 8, 2020, JLA exercised on the elliptical without supplemental oxygen for 15 minutes without incident. Mr. Brent Wolcott, a certified strength and conditioning specialist, supervised JLA and instructed her to stop if she felt that she could not complete the full 15 minutes. Before JLA began to exercise, Mr. Wolcott connected JLA to a monitor to check her blood pressure, heart rate, oxygen saturation, CO2 levels in her air while on the elliptical. Then on June 9th, 2020, JLA exercised again for almost 15 minutes on the elliptical, and Mr. Wilcox monitored her as he had done the day before. JLA had nearly completed the 15-minute exercise when her knee bobbled, causing her to collapse. With her knee bobbled, JLA had been exercising at the low 1 bar level for approximately 8 minutes. After her collapse, we checked JLA's vital signs, gave her water, and placed a cool towel on her forehead. We then moved her to an exam room to rest and be monitored. JLA told us several times that she was fine, and we continually monitored her vitals to ensure that she was recovering safely, which she did. She had no complaints in the beginning of fatigue from the episode. JLA has been accompanying her to the clinic on June 9, 2020, and at the completion of the day, drove her home after leaving the facility that day. I submit that my treatment for JLA met the standard of care, and I respectfully ask the board to dismiss this case. I need to know that I have upheld an outstanding clinical and and Sarah Daly to bring the best medical care to each patient in Martinsburg. Thank you.
Thank you.
There was almost died as a result of having a knee buckle on the medical. There was a, emergency room 10 minutes away from the facility, and the complainant chose not to go there after she was discharged from the facility. Regarding, I don't know how much the board wants to get into the paycheck issue, but as we stated in our response, it's our position that the complainant charged and put down time for at work the things that she did for it when we asked her to overpaid, and she did not do anything in terms of the paycheck. And regarding the Dr. Anderson's significant other, he's not.
He is not practicing medicine without a license and facilitating the HR department, so he does the payroll and he monitors that type of facility with all the employees. And he is a PhD, so he does a lot of investigating. He does a lot of looking at things and helping us to better manage patient care by looking at data and research online to help know what is upcoming and how we can best treat chronic health conditions with the latest data from research.
And finally, I'll just say, in closing, that Dr. Anderson's treatment of the standard care, and we respectfully ask the board to dismiss this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Dr. Anderson, let me just get a quick little background on it. Was she an employee of yours first and then wanted to be treated by the clinic?
So she had talked with Thomas Inkledon, who's the owner and PhD of the clinic, and he and her had had discussions in reference to her state of health and possibly being able to help her with her health conditions, her chronic health conditions, which she presented to our clinic with already. And they had conversations without my presence before she was hired. Part of those conversations included if she was hired, then she would have more money than she currently has because she would be getting paid for services rendered at the clinic as an employee. And she would be better able to financially support herself getting care. And also, we allow our employees to use the exercise equipment and other exercise devices at the clinic on their free time, say before their shift starts, after their shift is completed, during the lunch break, that type of thing. So she would have access to a gym, approximately 5,000 square foot gym in our facility, and she would have access to all of that equipment and any other pieces of equipment that she would like to use to better her health. And we would teach her how to utilize all of those pieces of equipment so she could use them on her own time. And then any type of medical intervention, she could help afford better because she was receiving a paycheck over and above what she was already earning before she was an employee with us.
Okay.
Is that
it does. When she did come, and obviously was a, assessed for exercise physiology, et cetera, did you also, it sounds like you also combined her general health care questions and concerns kinesiology portion.
So I did an initial intake on her. You have a copy of that information, and so we got past medical history on her, and part of what she wanted to do and was asking us for support in doing that was weight loss, so, and more movement, so she could help with edema and that sort of health condition. So we wanted to facilitate that for her. And so it was a combination of movement therapy, exercise, and then, if time allowed, other therapies that might help her. As you can see from her employment and the fact that the initial consult was done towards the end of May, and then her resignation was before the middle of June, there wasn't much time to facilitate a whole lot of health care during that time period.
Okay. And since she was an employee slash patient, did she do all of the, I'm looking through your forms, did she do, it looks like all the consent work was on the patient portion? That's what I thought.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me go ahead and our board members, let's run through. Let me start up with you, Dr. Staff. Another question for Dr. Anderson.
Dr. Anderson, just a quick side. So, what exactly treatment did you give? Is it all of them have an IV treatment, or what exactly did you actually give to the patient?
Okay, so you're talking about the DBDI and the RHC. So this is a ozone treatment, and what it is it's a UVBI machine. So the blood goes through a cuvette that then is passed through light, UVA, UVC, red, green, amber, and blue light are in that machine. It goes through that machine, and then it goes into tubing that is then ozonated and then back into the patient. And the board had requested pictures, and so I took pictures of that whole unit and that setup. And so,
I got it. So the only treatment you give to the patient has been only NASH, any other IV treatment at all?
That was the bulk of the treatment. That was it, and it was one time.
Oh, one time, okay. And then, And once she got the ozone treatment, is there any side effect after the ozone treatment?
No,
she didn't complain about dizziness, she didn't complain about chronic fatigue, headache, migraine headache, anything like that?
No, chronic fatigue was part of her constitution whenever she came in. And so chronic fatigue is part of her past medical history, along with some of those other symptoms that you're mentioning. Have you read through her past medical history?
Yeah, I did, but I just wanna know after she gets the ozone treatment, I just wanna find out after the treatment if she talk to you about any side effects, if any improvement, or any other negative.
I just want to
make sure that did she mention anything like that to you, or anything happened?
No, I wrote down everything in the chart notes, and there was no complaint. There was no issues that she had immediately following. I would not expect her to directly after that treatment feel any major change.
For the ozone treatment after you gave to not only this particular patient, but after the ozone treatment, what are the patients, how long do you observe them after the treatment? Do you ask them to sit there for 10-15 minutes, go right away? How do you usually do it? I'm just playing.
Usually they're there for a minimum of 30 minutes. Generally speaking, they're there for longer because after the ozone treatment, there's a pretty substantial cleanup that happens with that. And generally speaking, because that whole process takes approximately 1 hour, you're usually in a dialogue with the patient by that point in time. And so you continue that dialogue with the patient as you're cleaning up and doing all of that and reassessing them. You'll also notice that, generally speaking, there's not a, fast checkout process or anything else like that in the office. So they are around and being monitored by myself, generally speaking, for at least 30 minutes. In this case, she did not go immediately home.
I do ozone too, so I just want to see what your process is. So apparently when you gave her the treatment ozone, she didn't complain of any kind of effect, anything like that. I just want to make sure that you make that clear first.
Yes, that is 100% correct.
Okay, all right. Listen, thanks. That's all the question I have, Dr. Fowler.
Okay,
thank you.
Let me go to Dr. Rubin for his questions.
Thank you, Dr. Rubin here. I was just going to ask if Dr. Anderson, would you mind getting a little closer to the speakerphone? It's difficult for me to understand some of what you're saying. Thank you. For the ozone treatment that you used, I didn't see it. Maybe I missed it. I probably did. How many micrograms were used in that first treatment?
10.
What?
10 micrograms. So the 10 gamma. 10, 10.
That's it?
That's it. All my patients on their first treatment receive the lowest possible dose. That lowest possible dose is 10 gamma, so 10 micrograms.
Well, how many mLs?
So during this process, you connect one line to an AC vein on one side of the body and another line to an AC vein on the other side of the body. So you basically have an outlet and an inlet. And the blood pump is set at 30, and that is just in relation to the gauge of the catheter which is used, and in this case it's a 20-gauge catheter. So blood flow is dependent upon pressure and also somewhat of a gravity feed. And so it's estimated around 500 or more milliliters. So between 500 and probably 1,000 milliliters will be ozonated and passed back into the patient within that 1 hour time frame.
Yeah, but 10 micrograms is minuscule. Usually the micrograms are the volume of ozone multiplied by gamma. 10 micrograms is almost nothing. Are you sure it's not 5,000?
No, it's very low because I always start my patients out on very low because I want to make sure that they don't have any Herxheimer's reactions, but they don't have any reactions to an ozone treatment. Then each treatment that we do, we increase that dosage of ozone.
What's your maximum dosage you give of micrograms of ozone?
So, you can go all the way up to 100 gamma if you really needed to, but you wouldn't do that because that could be very deleterious to the patient. So you never do that. So I usually go incrementally 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. Normally not going very much past 50 gamma for them. But each session I generally increase by 10, so that way I know what's going on and making sure that I don't have any side effects with any of my patients.
But Christy, we're still not understanding how many micrograms, 10 gamma is the concentration of ozone. But it doesn't tell us how many micrograms, which would be based on the total volume of ozone at a given concentration. And so I'm just wondering where, or maybe you guys could figure that out and let us know later so we don't spend time on it now.
I do.
Okay. And how many, do you recall how many units of heparin you used for this first procedure?
So in 500 milliliters, I used 7,500 units.
Do you think that would have caused any bleeding given the body apparatus?
I don't think so, and I haven't seen that.
Is that a pretty standard dose that you use?
Yes, that is a very standard dose that I use. I remember that probably about, I don't know, with this machine, two and a half years. And I've never had a problem with that before, so I wouldn't anticipate there to be any problem. And it's one of the reasons, again, why I use such low dose on the first, because I never know, they are, you know, bilaterally hooked up to IVs with catheters, and there is a continuous stream of blood flowing in and then back out of the patient for that hour. So I want to make sure that there is no, you know, vasovagal responses or anything else, or Herzheimer's responses. Generally, that would be later after the therapy. And so I do go extremely low and slow on that first session. Given her health history, I also would err on the side of caution and go low and slow for her, given kind of a very small.
Do you have any knowledge of any coagulopathic concerns of this patient that would have caused you to alter your heparin dosage?
No.
Do you think that dosage could have caused bladder bleeding?
I don't think so, because I think it's a low dose over time.
This is Dr. Rubin. Who's ever on the phone, can you please mute yourself for the rest of the welfare of this case and the rest of the board? And keep yourself muted until you talk. Sorry, this is Dr. Rubin again. Okay, God, and then I may have missed it. I was having a little trouble hearing, but I believe in your testimony you said you are not indeed conducting a research trial regarding EW02. This is not a research trial. You don't have an IRB because it's not research.
Correct. What we are doing with the patient is comparing themselves against themselves. That is why day one is without supplemental oxygen and day two is with supplemental oxygen. So we can compare blood parameters from day one compared to day two. And then if they subsequently review that therapy, we see over time that we can increase things like natural killer cells. And that is simply by doing lymphocyte subset panels, CBCs, TMDs, that type of thing. And so that is what we were doing, comparing the patient to themselves to make sure that the therapy is efficacious for that patient, and also to make sure that it's going in the correct direction. You don't want to do a therapy that is doing no good to the patient. They would have better time and resources spent doing other therapies that are bringing about more efficacy. So that is what we are doing, comparing the patient to themselves time and again with each session.
That's fine. And you can give shorter answers too, with direct answers to my questions, we understand. Or obviously whatever counsel says, you should, however you should answer. And then on June 9th, did you run an EKG or any kind of rhythm strip on the complainant?
I did not.
You did not? You did that, or you do not have one?
I don't have one in my office, and I did not run a rhythm strip on her.
Got it. Do you know why GLA, the complainant, opted not to go to the emergency room, which was close to your clinic, and or why she didn't ask you to call 911?
I don't know why she did not go to the emergency room. Her husband, whenever he picked her up, we told him what happened. And she said she was fine and that we continued to monitor her. At no time did I feel that her life was in jeopardy. At no time did I feel that there was anything more that emergency medical needed to to be called, and she was resting comfortably. Her pressures were increasing over time, and never did she lose consciousness.
JLA claims that one of the reasons that she, I can't say verbatim, but in her testimony, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk to JLA, that she was very confused due to her hypotension and due to her condition. At any time, did you perceive her being at that level of confusion where she, as a medical professional, would not be able to make decisions for herself?
No.
Of course. No. Okay.
No.
Thank you, Dr. Sedlak. I'm done.
Thank you.
Kind of let me add, move up to Ms. Gallen on her thoughts.
I don't have any thoughts from my field.
Okay. Can Ms. Davis join the line? No.
Yes, I have, but I wasn't there at the beginning of the case.
Okay. And then Dr. Field, he's recused. I just have a couple really quick questions for you. On the heparin, do you normally just have a certain dose that you utilize? Do you base it for body weight? Do you just base it for a protocol?
It's mostly based on the volume of saline being used. So in a 500 milliliter bag of normal saline, I would typically use the 7,500 heparin and then dose it downward if I was only doing 250 bags. And so that is kind of a standard. Now, I do obviously look at the patient and monitor their current blood markers if I have current labs on them. And that type of thing. So I do take that into consideration, but it is more of kind of a standard protocol and something that is fairly widely accepted as okay to that dose.
Okay. And obviously with your history, you're checking to make sure that Eliquis, Coumadin, or any of the other.
Correct.
Okay. That's what I thought. How about atrial fib? Do you
is it successful with it? Do you not do with AFib? I have not had many patients with AFib that I have done this procedure on myself. However, other colleagues of mine have done this procedure on AFib patients with no problem. And again, it's mostly about monitoring. It's one of the reasons why I do have the monitor on them, continually checking kind of blood pressure, pulse rate, that type of thing, whenever I do have them hooked up to the ozone machine, so that way, and the pulse oximeter. And so that way I can kind of monitor those vitals. And if anything were to be, going in the wrong direction, I would immediately stop and take care of.
Okay. And then on her particular condition, mast cell, did you feel it be any contraindication to doing it? I don't know if she was being treated for her mast cell with any type of medication like Romulin, et cetera, or was it just a known factor and was part of her etiology?
Known factor, part of her etiology, and because I was going low and slow on dose, I did not feel that there would be a problem.
Okay. But it looks like from just terping through this, she may have had like a little bit of secondary POTS, POTTS syndrome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And it's also the reason why I generally obviously have them lying down, feet up. I have them on a bed that I can, adjust the back. So if I need to put them, totally supine, I can, and I can move them if need be.
Sure. before we go to JLA, does anybody, Dr. Rubin, Spad, Dr. Campbell, I think I skipped you, so I'm sorry. Let me go to you.
Thank you. Actually, my questions have already been answered up to this point, and so I'll get back to you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions before we talk to JLA? No? Okay. JLA, are you still on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've heard questions, you've heard Dr. Anderson's response. Do you have any further comments?
Yes. They did have me on a heart monitor and did rhythm strips. So the fact that she can sit there and say that she didn't have a rhythm strip is kind of astounding. She did have it, and she came and showed it to me, and it showed arrhythmia, and she said, you should go see your cardiologist sometime. And my blood pressure, which is usually 140 over 92, when I collapsed, which was not caused by my knee buckling, it was caused by my loss of consciousness, which my blood pressure was 77 over 44, and my heart rate was 160, which they had told me that later. For somebody of my size and my health conditions, it seemed pretty obvious to me that I was in a state of shock. And my cardiologist, who I could only see virtually because it was the height of the hospital being overflowing with COVID patients at that time in particular, told me that I had the explanation for the ongoing arrhythmias that I was still suffering weeks later was from a massive mast cell degranulation episode where it releases over 2,000 kinds of inflammatory molecules, and it irritated my heart so much that I had this arrhythmia. So to say that there wasn't a rhythm strip in front of this board, is there some kind of surgery thing or something? But anyway, the whole also recount of how and why I collapsed, it was not the knee buckling, like I said. I passed out, and I was telling Bryce Wilcott for quite a while that I was going to pass out. And I felt like I was going to throw up. And everybody seemed to think that was kind of funny because football players do that too. And I don't think it's funny at all. And I had talked specifically with Dr. Anderson about the mast cell problem, which I was on four different medications for and had been since August of 2019 when my neurologist, Dr. David Saberstein, diagnosed it, and I was having some fairly good response to it. We don't have AFib, and then I had talked with Dr. Tom, as he likes to be called, Tom Eagledon, who I talked to him probably five, maybe six times about my concerns with the mast cell problem. And I also spoke with Dr. Anderson about that. And she assured me that they had a patient that was much worse than me with mast cell disease and that, you know, mine wasn't so bad and I need to worry about this over-exercise, which is a known trigger for mast cell degranulation, and that, you know, ended up what happened to me, And after the ultraviolet blood irradiation and ozone treatment, I was having massive amounts of symptoms and I had to go lay in a special room because the air conditioning wasn't working right. And I had to go lay in this other room on the other side of the building where it was cool. And I had to take nausea medication just to make it home without throwing up. And I had a headache. I had dizziness. And I had bleeding from my bladder. And the heparin is one of the things that mast cells release when they degranulate. And they degranulate in response to oxidative stress. What you get is ozone. There's just so many things about her recount of this situation. And oh, the other part too, about they're not doing research. He was stressing and pushing and telling me that he wouldn't support my working there if I didn't agree to pay thousands of dollars for the not research, as they put it. All of the labs that they draw on you before and after, it's thousands of dollars with each draw. And they told me that I wouldn't be able to get the treatment if I didn't agree to pay that lab work. And I did not ever, and have never heard before, that they are saying that I put down hours that I work and I didn't work. That is totally not true. Also, and I'm still just astounded, but he was complaining and talking repeatedly about how he had to get some more data from his research. He refers to it as research, and these people paying for these thousands of dollars of lab tests with the ozone, with the oxygen, with exercise one, they didn't tell me that they were going to do that until the Nicole, the phlebotomist, came and said, we have to draw your blood three times each day, and it's over $2,000 that you'll have to pay for each draw, so that's $6,000 per day. And they usually see a week or two apart, but for me, because I'm in such a bad shape, I guess, they decided I should do them the one day after the next, when I hadn't even recovered at all from the first day. I told them that I had barely been able to exercise on a recumbent bicycle with no resistance for 10 minutes after I was in physical therapy for several months before I came over there, and that's all the better my exercise tolerance was. But they assured me that because they would be monitoring me, that it would all be fine, and it wasn't fine at all. You know, I was in shock. I don't know how good the symptoms still are, but for the one
let me stop you for a moment. Just so I'm flowing with it. You, as you're saying, your blood pressure was 77 or 44. Have you always been hypotensive?
No, I just said my blood pressure runs 140 over 92.
Okay.
I'm not hypotensive at all.
Okay.
And my usual resting pulse rate is 60. They told me it was 160, and he's still urging me on, and I'm telling him that I'm going to pass out. He's still urging me on because he needs the data to reach 15 minutes for the research. There, he was.
Do you recall the medications you were on that day? Prescriptive medications, I'm referring to.
He prescribed me LASIK for the edema that I have with the mast cell problem, and I had taken. taken that, and I take Cromolyn, I take Famotidine, I take the other one, Fexofenadine.
Okay.
And I have to look at my,
That's fine. So on the day you have that test, that those were the medications that you were utilizing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they told me they had to have me do it 2 days in a row because they were going to be way too busy the next week and have me do it at their usual week interval. And I really, really, really wanted to be able to exercise, and they said that the oxygen would, you know, make it so I could, but I hadn't been able to. I really felt like I was going to stop after the first day. I could barely walk, and I was having a lot of symptoms, and they just encouraged me to get back on there. And the oxygen did seem to help at first, and then after about 5 minutes, I was like, I'm going to throw up, I'm going to pass out, I'm not going to make it. And he's just cheering me on. And Inkledon said, keep turning the resistance up. And I'm like, if you turn the resistance up, I absolutely will not make it. And I said, don't turn the resistance up. Because Inkledon left the room and left me there with Wilcox, who was supposed to be monitoring me for my safety, but he was monitoring me to get me to do the 15 minutes so he could have his research data. And I was mistakenly believing that they cared about my safety. And then I collapsed on the exercise thing because I blacked out. My knee was buckled. I couldn't get, when I woke back up, I was hanging from my right shoulder, tangled in the handlebars, and my knee was completely bent the wrong way. I have knee replacement surgery, and I, you know, obviously, it's in my record, weighing 300 pounds, and I have no high blood pressure, and they still thought it was a really fine thing for me to go forward with that exercise thing. And clearly it wasn't, for multiple reasons, the mast cell degranulation exercise trigger being the main one. And then I couldn't get loose. I was stuck. I was hanging there by my arm, and I have injured my arm and neck, which I'm still dealing with now. And it's been extremely painful for me, and also emotionally disturbing that they would see me like that with that low blood pressure. And they know what my regular blood pressure is. And they were monitoring me, and they had a rhythm strip. He showed it to me. So to have her sit there and tell you that she didn't have a rhythm strip, she destroyed that evidence then, which is a whole nother story. And anyway, I as you can tell, I am still quite upset about this, and it's been almost a year, and I've had counseling, I've had all kinds of work trying to, you know, I just feel like it's a dangerous situation that's not going on over there. That ozone machine is cobbled together with an ultraviolet machine that they weren't meant to go together. And I've had definitely did have negative side effects afterwards. And I, like I said, had to go lay down in a cool place for several hours before I could even leave. And then I had to take anti-nausea medication on the way home. And, okay, go ahead.
Okay, how old are you?
63.
63, okay. Let me, I'm going to turn it back to my other board members. And I'm sure they have a couple quick questions for you too. So let me go ahead. I'm going to turn it back to. I guess I'll start off with Dr. Span if he's okay.
Okay.
thank you for being here with us. And so I just have a few questions to ask you, if you don't mind. Did you make the decision to do this exercise? And who actually talked you into doing this?
I was interested in it because it was my understanding that the oxygen would make it possible for me to exercise a little more than I could without the oxygen. And I did not know that the protocol of their research means that you have to do it for 15 solid minutes and you have to do it without the oxygen first. Or pay $6,000 in lab for them, and they have to draw your blood three times in that basically about 20 minutes. I only have one vein that works, so.
Okay. So were you the staff member as well?
I did work there. Yes. I was trying to learn all this stuff. They wanted me to be in charge of that ozone ultraviolet blood procedure.
So before you did the exercise and so forth, did you sign a consent or anything like that at all? You signed a consent to do the exercise and so forth?
I don't remember a specific exercise consent, no. I think there was general acceptance of treatment from medical professionals. Yes.
Okay. So I just want to go back to that day. So that day you come in, they did all your vital sign and then they said, okay, yeah, are you ready to do this test? Are you agree to it? How did it come about?
They said that this is the time, and they hook you up to the heart monitor and the blood pressure cuff and put the mask on that have the oxygen in it, and you start doing it. Well, they put the blood drop first.
Okay, so did they explain to you how the whole process works? No,
not until immediately before the first exercise period. I didn't know I wasn't going to have the oxygen. I didn't know that they were going to draw my blood three times and expect me to pay $6,000 for it.
Okay. Could you move it? If you not, I have a difficult time listening to Ms. KLA, so if you could move your phone, I appreciate it. I can hear a lot of background noise, so on the phone, if you could move yourself, I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so sometimes you come in and then they say, okay, this is your day, and then you just exercise and do the blood test, and then the blood draw and do the UV light. So that was it, huh? Nothing else?
No, I was working before that, and they were showing me how to set the machine up, and that was going to be my job, basically, to run that and also to collect all of the blood specimens for the research that he was
doing. Okay. But have you seen other people doing this exercise before? Have you witnessed? Have you seen it?
I have not seen it No, I knew about exercise with oxygen therapy, which was a much lower intensity thing that you would get where the nasal cannula.
Yeah. Okay, no, my question is, do you witness the other patient in the clinic that this test, or you haven't seen anyone that it? And this is the first time you're doing it?
Yeah, this is the first time I've seen it was when I did it.
Okay, so you didn't witness when any other patient doing the same thing that you did?
Not the exercise one. I did see a patient, actually it was Tom Engledon, who's the patient, doing the ultraviolet one.
So, with some other patients, they have received the ultraviolet and also the ozone therapy. Am I correct?
Yeah, and there was one patient that myself and Dr. Anderson and Flamani Nicole.
Okay, so when you witness those patients, do they, so I just want to get, you know, from your perspective. So when you see those patients after they did receive the ozone and the UV light, was there any side effects with those patients at all?
Well, Engledon has had it done what sounds like tens of dozens of times. He didn't have any kind of reaction to it. The other patient got really sick and threw up and passed out, and it was a kind of a mess.
So you would have witnessed someone that actually has the side effect in the clinic?
Yes.
Oh, you did? Okay. So, and roughly, how many patients you actually witnessed
that? Was myself, Engledon, and the other patient, the one patient. They basically asked for my resignation after that, because I wasn't able to keep up and I couldn't learn the computer system, and because I was having all of these collapses on their treatment. And they were wondering if I was just accident prone, not that it was a ridiculous thing to try to put me through in the first place.
So you saw you saw Dr. Engledon, and then you saw another patient did the treatment of the ozone and the UV light, and there was one patient that you actually witnessed and saw they have side effects from it. Am I correct?
Yeah, there were three total. Myself and the one other patient both had side effects from it.
Okay. And then, so when you actually proceed this to exercise, did you aware that they're going to do your blood test? Did you aware that the side effect might happen like the other patient?
No, that I had my treatment before the other patient, so I didn't have seen that before I got it. And I was aware that they were going to draw my blood for the ozone therapy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me backtrack a little bit. So you didn't witness the patient that got side effects, but until after you did the exercise and the treatment, is that what it is?
No, we're talking about the ozone ultraviolet treatment.
Right. So did you witness before you received the treatment, or did you witness that after you received the treatment?
Which treatment? I'm totally confused now.
Okay, the ozone and the UV light, ma'am.
The order that it went was, I observed Dr. Anderson doing the treatment on a patient, the ozone ultraviolet, and then they had me basically do it with Engledon, and then, they might have done it with me first. Yes, they did. The first time I saw it was Dr. Anderson doing it with a patient, and then they did mine, and then after that they had me do it with a staple gun, and then I had the other patient that got nauseous and grew up and I forget though. Anyway, I think that was the order. It's been a year, and I don't have a good memory. But,
yeah, so, all right, that's fine. Thank you. All right, I just want to know how many patients you actually have witnessed in the clinic that might have side effects after the ozone is UV light. That's all I want to know. And so, all right.
Okay.
Well, that's all. Wait, no, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Spence. Dr. Rubin, can I move on to you?
Yeah, I'm just writing a couple things down for time. Maybe move on to one other and then you circle back.
Sure. I'll circle back to you. Let me move on to Dr. Campbell.
Thank you. Jay, I like, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Can you tell me exactly how long were you employed at this location?
Well, I went there for an interview on Memorial Day, May, like, 27th, and then it was, I was only there, I think, actually working for 6 or so, maybe 8 total days, and then after I had that collapse on the 9th of June, that was the last day that I was working there.
Okay, and on the quest, you were in the middle of the test, and you acknowledged that you had booked people in the room about how you're feeling, and at some point, you passed out. Then you awoke, and when you awoke, what did you see? Where were you at? Can you make that clear?
Yeah, I was on a sort of elevated elliptical machine, a big one, and kind of up in the air, and I had fallen half forward into the machine that had the handlebars, and my right arm was stuck in the right handlebar, and I was sort of dangling from that, and my left knee was bent backwards, and I couldn't get either one of my knees under me. My legs were shaking, and I was feeling like I was going to throw up still. And that's where I was. And I kept saying, somebody help me with my leg, because I couldn't get my right leg underneath, and there was no way I could get my left leg to work, because it was bent wrong, and they had a couple of people that came, and they weren't hearing me say that I needed to get my leg underneath, and so I'm still hanging there for quite a while, in like, I don't know, a minute, and another attendant of a patient that was in the gym there heard me calling for help with my leg, and he came over and helped with my leg, and then I was able to sort of slump backwards on the back of the machine, still upright and sitting up, and then they brought a chair over, and they helped me slide back into the chair. And that was when I just had the heart monitor machine and thought that my blood pressure was 77 over 44. And I said, oh, that can't be mine because my blood pressure is never that low. And nobody said anything. And so that's where I was.
At a point, Dr. Anders called to help you.
I don't know for sure when she came, but I was sitting upright in that chair for quite a long time, and I still felt terrible, and I finally realized that I should have my legs elevated, and I said I should have my legs elevated, and then so then they had me walk into this treatment room, and it was close, and so I lay down and I asked for a cold cloth for my head, and they brought that. And then Dr. Anderson came in and showed me the ribbon strip, that she had very clearly in paper in her hand. And she showed it to me, and she goes, you should see your cardiologist sometime. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's a good idea. Because I was not thinking. It wasn't like, oh, I'm the medical professional in charge here, I can manage them. I need them to call 911, and I'm not thinking. And it took hours for my blood pressure to come up to 110. I was laying there for a couple of hours, and 110 is still extremely low for me.
At any time when you were laying there, did you pass in, yes or no?
No.
And at any time, did you request paramedics to respond? Did you feel that you were in a position that you needed paramedics to respond at that point?
Like I said, I wasn't thinking clearly at all. I mean,
and was there?
No, he was at a dental appointment.
And so at some point after we're laying down for a while, your husband arrived?
He arrived several hours after this happened.
Okay, and then what happened?
Then I'm like, I want to get out of here. And I need to go home. I'm still not thinking well.
After Dr. Anderson showed you the strip, did she have any other contact with you specific to you? As a medical doctor, did she take your blood pressure? Did she ask anybody else to take your blood pressure? Were they sitting with you, monitoring you? Were you on a regular machine, anything like that?
No. They left me alone in the room and popped in every once in a while.
Once you told your husband that you wanted to get out of there, then you guys left?
Yeah.
And how did you exit the facility? Did you exit the facility on foot or via wheelchair?
No, they don't have a wheelchair there, as far as I know. I didn't have a wheelchair. I walked slowly to the car.
But
my husband, I just went. What?
And you exited the facility and you got in the car with your husband?
Yeah.
At that point?
Your phone is breaking up. I can't.
Oh, no, can you hear me better? Can you hear me better now?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you exited the facility with your husband and you got in the vehicle, were you feeling better at that point?
I was feeling well enough to sit up and walk a little bit to the car. But I was not feeling at all good. No.
Did your husband discuss the possibility that he needed to be seen by somebody at that point, or did she think it was best to go home?
I don't remember. I was still really out of it, and you know, I'm a medical professional of 30 some years, and people tend to defer to me in medical decision making, and not recognizing that I was in shock was a big part of why they didn't call the paramedics.
Now, from that day forward, when was the very next time, if at any time, that you saw that you took that you went yourself to see a medical professional of any kind after that date? When was the very next time that you saw a medical professional?
I called that next on Monday. I called the consulting nurse because I felt like I was possibly having a heart attack and my heart was still beating really bad, and I was getting dizzy and having cold sweats in the house, even though the air conditioner was on. I felt weak, and I was clearly having an arrhythmia. And we were driving into Phoenix, and I called the consulting nurse to ask her which ER to go to that my insurance covered, and she wouldn't tell me, and she said, you have to stop right now and call 911, and we were 5 minutes away from an ER, so we just went on to the ER because urgent care first. Anyway.
Now, respective to your husband, you know, you guys have been married for how long?
5 or 6 years.
Do you think your husband knows you well enough to know when or when not, by looking at you, that maybe there's something not right and maybe I need to get her to the hospital?
He is right here if you want to ask him.
Sure.
Well, my name is Charles Thetier, married to JLA, and what I can say about that is, as JLA just mentioned, and she's been a medical practitioner for a number of decades, and people tend to defer to her. And my observation was that she was. Had had a traumatic experience, and she described it to me. And so we talked about maybe we should go out to Phoenix. We live in a small town, which doesn't really have much medical care available to us. So the option would been to go to the Phoenix area. So we talked.
Sir, can I actually stop you there? Just to be more productive in my questioning, not nothing to report with respect to you, but I need to be more productive in my questioning. When you picked her up that day at the clinic, at some point the staff advised you of what had took place with your wife, and at some point you sat with her for a while and then you left. Why not bring her to the emergency room if there's some type of an issue?
Yeah, so I should maybe correct your review there. The staff didn't really apprise me very much at all as to what happened. My recollection is that the one secretary came up to me and said, do you know what happened? As if I was supposed to have already known what had happened. No, what happened?
I see.
No medical staff approached me to say, you know, your wife is on an exercise machine, an exercise protocol, and she collapsed, and she was lying down for several hours and trying to recoup. Nobody told me. So
now, when you saw your wife, did she look okay to you?
Well, she was clearly drained and clearly de-energized and did not look well. And we did have a brief conversation about this. So what should we do? I did have to help her. You know, man, I don't have to. She does not walk with the walkers when I'm trying to stay. So, and I don't substitute myself as a walker, as a device to support her when she walks, generally hardly ever. But this time I did have to assist her to the car, and we spoke briefly about that. So honey, what do you want? What do you think we should do? And she just wanted to go home. And I, perhaps mistakenly, not being a medical professional at all, I suppose in retrospect, you could say I mistakenly deferred to her wish to go home when I well should have said maybe we should go. Not maybe, I think we should go. I can do that. My mistake.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. And here we'll appreciate it. and taking the time to explain that. Dr. Sadler, I don't have any other questions right now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Dr. Rubin, do you have any more questions? I think
we're Dr. Rubin here.
You. Hi.
Okay, good. Thanks, Dr. Rubin here. Thank you, Dr. Sedelec. Okay, got it. So, Ms. GLA, I guess I'm wondering, why did you continue the treatment, or why did you even submit for the treatment if you knew that you couldn't tolerate the treatment?
I don't know where you got that I knew I couldn't tolerate the treatment. Are you talking about the oxygen with exercise treatment?
Correct. In your testimony, let me refer you to your testimony, which I have to get back to, 11 pages, so let me see.
I think I've answered that a couple of times, and I kept bringing it up to Inkle Lodge and to Kelsey Anderson that I wasn't sure it was a good idea, and they kept telling me it would be fine. And the last thing he said to me was, I'm not going to hurt you. And that was right before I do feel like I'm right.
But you said, I told Bryce that I would not be able to work out for 15 minutes, even at the lowest resistance. I was able to start and then force myself to keep going on the machine, but I insisted that he turn the resistance back down as I could barely keep going. At 14 minutes, I was nauseous, lightheaded, and nearly fell off the machine, but was able to stand. So you gave yourself this challenge, is the way I perceive this. And as a medical professional, I'm asking you, you said that you had been in physical therapy for the previous 2.5 months, and the most strenuous thing you've been able to work up to was 10 minutes on a recumbent bicycle with zero resistance. So I'm wondering why you would, knowing your conditions, why would you submit to this? It doesn't seem consistent with everything that you said, and then your testimony, you said, I can't do it. You know yourself well. You're your own best advocate. You're a 30-plus-year nurse practitioner. I'm wondering why you would submit for something you know you couldn't do and then complain about it later.
Well, maybe if you had been in my shoes or my quick time, you would maybe know that I'm trying to help myself. I really want to be more healthy. I really want to help people, and I want to help. And he wants me to do this because he wants me to read this day because he's a big publisher and it can
all right, but Ms. GLA,
a whole
you helping
me want to make this my fault.
Okay, please.
For their lack of whatever it was, care, basic care for anybody that would collapse with a blood pressure like that in your facility, you would think it was their fault if they called 911. Even if you think, well, maybe they should have advocated for themselves, even though I've been telling her for 2 weeks that she can do this as a medical professional in charge. You're going to sit there and tell me that it should have been me.
No, I'm just simply asking you, and I know you're angry.
No, you're not simply asking me. You're accusing me of bringing this on myself. You think I wanted to have a collapse and have an arrhythmia and feel like shit for months and injure my arm and my neck? I didn't want to. Believe me. I was given a carrot that I would be able to exercise with this oxygen, that I would be able to rehab under his expert advice. And that is far from the truth of what happened.
Dr. Sedelec, I have no further questions. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Rubin. In attempts to wrap it, let me go back up on call list here. Let me ask Ms. Gallen if she has any questions.
I don't, thank you.
Okay.
I have something else I want to say, too, is that on one of the last days that I was there, I witnessed Inkle Dawn accosting his wife in front of me and another employee for upwards of 15 or 20 minutes. He was yelling at her with a barely controlled rage and exhorting her to give this 96-year-old patient a cancer treatment shot, and he was trying to say that he couldn't do it, and he was screaming at her about it in the very room with other employees and totally berating her. It was extremely horrible treatment. And that was part of my testimony originally was this hostile workplace where he had complete domination over her, and they wanted me to give this shot, and then I wasn't going to be there, and I don't know if she ended up giving it to him or not, but because they basically fired me at that time, and they still have that data. They never even given me a bill for any lab work. They've never given me any results for the lab work, and that they're blatantly lying about the circumstances around that financial transaction. So
okay,
that's what else we have to say.
Daley, I need to move through my list here of board members.
Okay.
So I'm gonna move to Ms. Tibbetts. And see what she needs has to say.
I don't have any questions, but because I missed the opening part, I can't participate in this case.
Okay. All right. In terms of the domestic issues, that's not within the board's privy. The pay obviously is going to have to be resolved between you and Dr. Anderson. But I want to tip back one more time to either Mr. King or Dr. Anderson so we can come to closure with this.
Yes, thank you. Dr. Anderson would like to make a brief statement and rebut some of the testimony.
Okay.
So as far as a rhythm strip, the unit that she was connected to that monitored her vitals is called Masimo, and it's the ROOT system. So MASIMOROOT is the system. So what it does is it has a pulse oximeter, it has a blood pressure cuff, it has a nasal cannula, so it measures O2, oxygen saturation, it measures CO2 expelled, it measures blood pressure. And because it has a pulse ox, it does show the pulse on the screen. There is no way of printing this. We can print some data from it, and we submitted to you guys some of that data. We submitted to you the heart rate from 6-8 and also 6-9 that was continually monitored with the blood pressure readings that we did on 6-8 and 6-9. Also, subsequently, after on 6-9, so this is the day that she elaborated on 6-9, after 1 hour of monitoring, she had a blood pressure of 84 over 65. Then later at 2:27 p.m., she had a blood pressure of 131 over 71. With a 98% O2 saturation and a pulse of 58. And then at 2:43 p.m., shortly before she left, she had a blood pressure of 138 over 72 with a pulse of 65. So, yes, there was a decrease in blood pressure, but that turned to a fairly normal blood pressure at 2:43 p.m. of 138 over 72 with a pulse of 65 before she left the office. The entire time from her collapse onward, she was being monitored. Yes, I did excuse myself here and there to get a drink of water, to go to the bathroom, this type of thing, because it was a fairly lengthy time. And as far as whenever she fell off the machine and then how long it took to move back to a bed, we wanted to make sure she was stable before we moved her any further. So she was moved from the machine to a chair right behind the machine and then into an adjacent room to lie down. So again, making sure patient safety and making sure she was stable in order to do that. She is a large woman, so it does take a lot of literal manpower to move her if she were to be completely unstable and needing to be carried. She did on June 8th, she went through this process with the exercise with oxygen therapy. She knew all about the blood draw, she knew all about the flow of everything. And because she was an employee since the end of May, so over a week's worth of time, she had ample time and she had complete access to all of our records. We have a whole protocol sheet printed out, and it goes step by step as far as what we're doing as far as blood draws, and then we put the vital signs next to each blood draw, then we write down the exact parameters of the exercise routine, time, duration, et cetera, and then follow that with all the subsequent blood draw times and vital readings that go along with those blood draws. So she was very well aware. If not before the 8th, she was very well aware on the 8th what the 9th would also look like. She had ample opportunity to also walk through the entire facility for over a week to see what the EWOT was, and also to ask as many questions as she wanted to. And again, she had access to all of our protocols. So she could have looked over, and it goes step by step as far as what is part of that whole protocol as far as blood draw, exercise sessions, et cetera. Like with any exercise session that a person might undergo, you're asked to do your best, and if need be, you can stop at any time. This was also told to her and every other person that is in the gym that wants to exercise. So she could have stopped at any time. There was no forcing her or anything else to stay or keep doing what she was doing. Then as far as the RHP hemolumen, which is the ozone and UVBI procedure, JLA had that procedure done on May 29th, and so therefore she had subsequent days to make anything noted as far as side effects, et cetera. And then on June 3rd was when she tried to perform this procedure on the other patient that she's talking about. That patient's initials is JRS. He is still a patient of ours. In fact, I gave him an IV this morning before I came to this hearing. And he generally has a little trouble as far as venous access, so his veins are not great. And with the process of RHP hemolumen, like I said earlier in this procedure, we have to access two bilateral veins on each side of the body. So generally speaking, those are AC veins. And so you have to use a 20-gauge catheter, so not a small needle, and use a catheter and insert it into each AC vein. JRS was not very skilled at vein puncture, and JLA was not very skilled at vein puncture, and she was trying to get veins on JRS, the patient. She had to do repeated sticks with a 20-gauge needle and do what we call fishing around to find the vein. This was making the patient JRS on June 3rd feel not very comfortable, and subsequently he went into a vasovagal type of response due to that. He went through that vasovagal response, recovered, and then I accessed bilateral AC veins on JRS, and we had a complete session. So, and that was on June 3rd. So it was a skill, it was a lacking of venipuncture skills by JLA that caused the patient JRS, who she witnessed on June 3rd, to have kind of a response to the van puncture. This was not, I repeat, not a response to the therapy. The therapy had not even been started because bilateral AC veins had not been acquired. Once the bilateral AC veins were acquired, we were able to run that procedure sometime later. So I think that is most of my rebuttal. The ozone and the ozone therapy that she received, JLA received again, was on May 29th. And then the exercise with oxygen therapy that she also has problems with was on June 8th and 9th. So they were separated by over a week's worth of time. And so I want to make sure that both of these two things stay very clear and distinct as far as the issues associated with each one.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Anderson. My quick question for you, and then I'm going to go back to the board members so we can wrap this. After what's going on today, obviously the complaint, et cetera, is there anything you would have done differently than what you already did?
No. My primary concern is patient safety, and I believe that she was safe and she was monitored.
Thank you. Dr. Rubin, let me start down on the roll call with you if I could and just work on an office because we're going to need a motion so I can move this case along.
Absolutely, this is Dr. Rubin. I understand that there may be another tribunal for this case and that some of these issues that are brought up are certainly just not relevant for what our medical board has been asked to do by Governor Ducey. And to, because of this and because of such inconsistencies that I see and because of testimony from both, I don't see any medical negligence. And it sounds like the doctor that enjoys licensure through this board monitors and understands the procedures that she may have even developed. And that I don't see any cause to move forward, and I would be in favor of dismissal.
Okay, so is that a motion, Dr. Rubin? Okay, thank you.
I could make it a motion. I didn't know if you were seeking input from the rest of the board first.
Hang on to that thought. Let me move quickly to Dr. Spatt. Dr. Spatt?
Dr. Anderson, I do have a quick question I want to ask you, and that is, with JLA, what was the decision why was she, you know, coach her to do the exercise, was it her idea that women need to do this exercise and treatment? So I just want to make that clear first.
She wanted to improve her health. And that was part of the reason why she was with us. And that included exercise. Yes, we went over the exercise with oxygen. I have used it on patients before her. I continue to use it with patients afterward. And I do believe it is important to her health. However, she needs to be cognizant of her own ability to control herself. And if she feels she needs to stop, she should. We have patients that can sometimes only want to go on an elliptical for 3 minutes, and then they stop, and they're perfectly fine. The next time, they might go 4 or 5 minutes. So it's about self-monitoring as well. The heart rate monitor and blood pressure.
I just want to know who's the decision to move on. I got the email earlier. Okay. So my next question would be, so I know that she was in-house staff. My suggestion would be next time, if you could, just to be safe, have the staff, whoever this wants to do the procedure or any type of exercise, that I would highly recommend you to ask them to fill out the consent. That's all I want to say.
So fill out a consent?
For the exercise for the procedure, for the treatment, whatever it is that you're going to plan to do in your office, regardless if it's your patient or in-house employee, then that's just my suggestion. It's up to you on it, but I just want to tell you that for future reference.
Thank you. And she did fill out all of our consents as well, so she was consented to exercise.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I have to put that on.
Thank you.
Dr. Campbell?
I don't have anything else to add. I think it's important for the complainant to understand the purview of our board and that we can hear and that we have a responsibility over and how we have to focus specifically on the public health and safety respected to those who are licensed by our boards. And as far as employee compensation issue, that's something that is separate from our board, we don't deal with as far as understand whether or not someone else is practicing without a license. If we're not provided with evidence of actual practicing without a license as it relates to the naturopathic medical board, then we're not going to open another case and move forward, in that respect either. And so with respect to the conduct of Dr. Anderson, I believe that the standard of care was met, respected to addressing a medical concern that took place inside the facility, monitoring the progression of the patient's progress in care. At no point during the documentation does it show that the patient was decompensating from her first contact of care respected to after the incident when she tapped out. In other words, her blood pressure was rising and progressing in the right way, and that there was no indication to the doctor to fill the need that she needed to dial 911. If it becomes an issue with the healthcare facility within 5 minutes away, the patient herself and her husband of 5 or 6 years, could have went to receive medical care on their own. And if at some point something was to happen, where she decompensated, call 911, all of which was apparently not necessary. And so at this point, there is no evidence that would warrant, in my opinion, us to do anything besides dismissing the case. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Ms. Galvin?
I'm on next right now.
Okay. And then, Ms. Tibbetts, you came in late, as you said. So, where we're at basically is we've had discussion twice. During the discussion, it was mentioned for case dismissal. Mr. King, do you have anything that you want to add?
No, Mr. Chairman, we agree with the dismissal motion. Thank you.
Okay. So, Dr. Rubin, let me digress back down to you. Do you want to make a formal motion for dismissal?
This is Dr. Rubin. I'm sorry, you need to be dismissed in this case.
Not Dr. Rubin.
Okay. Ms. Anderson, can you go ahead and do roll call on this?
Yes. Dr. Stadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
So I have to recuse on this one because I missed the first part.
I'm sorry, what was that, Ms. Tibbetts?
I thought I wasn't able to participate in this, so do I just not vote?
When did you come into the meeting?
It was after it had already started, after the table had already started.
And so I guess I can refer that back to...
When you presented, I missed the presentation when you presented the case, and Dr. Anderson had started her testimony when I joined.
Ms. Asta, do you have any comment on that?
Yes, I think Ms. Tibbetts was saying. Okay, I think.
Ms. Gallen?
Yeah, I agree.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, on September 8th, 2020, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a complaint from patient AM, alleging respondent refused to supply her with the ingredients she put in her IVs. As part of the investigation, the medical records for patient AM were subpoenaed by this investigator. Once received, they were found to be difficult to read, and on 10/23 of 2020, transcribed copies were requested. In review of the records, the IV protocol is simply referred to as a level 4 IVM, patient and last name, protocol. With the exception of what is noted on the working protocol form, there is nothing charted related to the contents of any of the IVs. Mr. Mahaffey defends Dr. Hubert's failure to provide the specific formula of the IVs to AM as, quote, AM seeks a formula protected by the Arizona Trade Secrets Act, end quote. Also, according to the response, the clinic webpage is, quote, is extensive in setting forth many of the natural substances used by the clinic to combat cancer, end quote. However, quote, the exact ingredients and dosages constitute a trade secret, end quote. At the meeting of January 14th of 2021, the board reviewed case number 2160 regarding Dr. Colleen Huber. At the meeting, the board voted to table the matter for 90 days, requesting Dr. Huber to submit 5 additional patient charts for the purpose of board review. Additionally, it was suggested prior to the submission of additional charts to the board, Dr. Huber complete CME in record keeping. Dr. Huber has supplied proof of her completion of the 8 hours of CME in charting. According to CME certificate, Dr. Huber completed the CME on January 17th of 2021. And the documents that Dr. Huber provided have been given to the board just as she provided them.
I have a statement to make.
Lastly, I'd like to mention at the onset that I did receive an anonymous mailing this week, actually two of them, identical documents. I forward those to the board staff. The board staff has those. Apparently, the board staff also received these documents, and the board staff will be doing an investigation. However, this in no way impacts my decisions up to date. So I want that to be known to make clear. And thank you for the introduction. General, Dr. Rubin, are you recused or are you?
This is Dr. Rubin. I received also anonymous mailings in duplicate as well. I've not forwarded, and I stand recused.
You stand recused. Any of the board members receive anonymous mailings? No? Okay. So, then, back to the queue. Any of these speaking with her, Mr. Hackery, or is that
Well, I'll be speaking as much as I can, but obviously, if you have direct questions for her, she will be the best place. Can I follow up a little on these anonymous mailings? Are you suggesting that the mailings were from, let me ask a wider question. Do they concern case number
20-160? They are referenced to case number 20-160, yes.
So, do I also understand that, can I know whether the board members read these materials and what impact they may or may not have? I mean, obviously, this is the first I'm hearing about it, so we haven't, I haven't certainly seen them. I doubt Dr. Huber's seen anything as well.
I received two mailings, and yes, I have read them. They don't impact my thought processing. And the board staff also, Ms. Anthony received them, and apparently it sounds like Dr. Rubin has also received them. Dr. Rubin, I guess, stands, he's not participating in that.
And so no other board members received anything?
No, again, let me make a general call out. Has any of the board members received any mailings in reference to this case? Number 21.
I didn't receive anything.
Okay.
Mr. Popio, let me not receive anything
other.
Okay. This is Diva. I didn't receive anything. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, no problem.
Do you want me to speak or? No, you don't want me to speak?
No, I
don't need to prove it. I'm sorry. I must say I'm at a tiny bit of disadvantage because I wasn't able to participate in the board's last hearing. But in speaking with my client and following up with Director Anthony, it seems to me that the board simply wanted to review the chart notes and ensure that Dr. Huber had attended her charting class. And then my hope is that we're then on our way to a dismissal of this matter. One of the things Ms. Anthony said was that Anne complained that she was not informed of what was in the substances used, but she indeed was informed of the substances used. I think it would call Dr. Norton, who also works with Dr. Huber, did inform him of the substances that were used. So that information is known to AM, but the trade secrets we stand behind. And so if you have questions regarding Dr. Huber's five charts, which she submitted, or any questions of her regarding her completing her chart class, I'll note for you all, she completed that on January 17th, which you'll know is about 3 days after she was asked to do that. These, of course, were on a voluntary basis as the board was kind enough to continue the initial review. And it's just still initial review, but I do ask that having fulfilled all of the requirements and there be nothing further that the board would dismiss this matter.
Dr. Stratton, I'll start with you.
Hi, this is Dr. Stratton. Could you get another person who's going to go back with me later?
I'll circle back. I'll circle back here. Let me jump off to Dr. Montalvo.
What was your understanding of concerns we have with your partner? What do you feel like our main concerns were when we discussed that issue?
As
I was apparently your understanding of this and your lawyer's understanding of this is that because you have, to use this mark, finger quotes, a proprietary formula, that you don't actually have to follow the same guidelines as the rest of the naturopathic community and actually do a legitimate chart notes and documents at OAP. I understand on a procedural visit, there may not be anything new in that, but I can guarantee you there should be something O and A and P, and that's not happening. So, clearly, the take-home message is limited that to our concerns, and in my opinion, your chart notes are absolutely no different than the first presentation of chart notes, and do not reflect a valid chart note as the board of opinion that your proprietary document doesn't use the document, nor do you need to follow the standard SOAP guidelines. That's all I'm
going to say. You don't seem to have paid attention to what Dr. Campbell said in the last meeting. You seem to be acquiesced by the board, and that is that the formulation of an IV needs to be available in case of an emergency room visit. I agree to that, and you were present when I agreed to that. Okay, those formulations are available to any emergency room that requires them, but I've been giving IV nutrients for 14 years, and that has never been asked because we have had no subsequent emergency room visits ever. And as you know, no patient has alleged harm at any time. Further, if you actually look at the chart notes that I submitted, they all have S, O, K, and P because that is standard charting procedure. If there is a visit in which the patient arrives a half an hour late and there is no opportunity to meet with the doctor, I will not invent an O or an S or even an A other than the known diagnosis. So then I'm not going to pretend that there was a consult that did not take place. And you see SOAP throughout these chart notes, and you see them in greater, excuse me, I just need to finish what I'm saying. You see SOAP in greater than 90% of the chart notes that I submitted to you. If you see any of the SOA or P that is missing, that is because there was no consult at all. The patient simply arrived for treatment, said, I have to get to work, I'm rushing, I just make sure that my treatment is ready by the time I arrive, and then they leave. The nursing notes also fill in with the details of venous access. So that is the O for that visit. But otherwise, as you see, SOAP note format is followed in over 90% of the chart notes, as it has been for 14 years myself.
Well, I guess let's go on a couple of things, just on the patient number one, first and foremost. So, like you said, your nurse's note. So you're of the opinion that an IV does not require any sort of vital. Is that your opinion? And if it is the opinion, and if they are doing the vital, why are they not in the chart note? We'll start there first and foremost.
Okay, it was decided in a meeting, and Mr. Mahaska, my attorney, was present at this meeting of a case that was heard a couple of years ago, in which the question arose before the board of should blood pressure, for example, be taken every single time? And there had been the question of a severely hypertensive patient, and there were a couple of times that the pressure wasn't taken. Now, I'm just doing this thing from all this time. He told me what was decided by the board. Anyway, as I have been advised, vitals are not required with every single visit, especially with well people. And I have a strong argument for not doing vitals at time. And that is, if you repeatedly take blood pressure from a normal tensive patient, you will create, in my medical experience, a hypertensive patient because you begin to reduce an atmosphere and an attitude of anxiety regarding blood pressure. We don't do that at our clinic. Our goal, our oath, is first do no harm. So I don't induce anxiety-producing situations. There is no need to take blood pressure on normotensive people if they've already been established to be normotensive. So there are times when vitals simply are not required because they have been taken and these people are well. I was told by a stage 4 cancer patient just the other day that he now runs up the stairs. he had arrived very, very ill. If I start taking blood pressure on him daily, because maybe you want me to, I think that will not serve his best interest of his health, and I'm certainly opposed to that.
How are you classifying your patient population as healthy? Yes, they're on their goal to trying to be healthy, but you have patients who are not over there to see you because of being in human cancer. It would make sense to me that, okay, maybe you have a big unvalidity to your argument. I don't think the board sees it that way as far as the vitals are concerned. However, it would make sense that you may be on every other visit, you might want to take vitals for a cancer patient. I know that based on my couple years on the board, never once that the concept that vitals could be glossed over, come up, or been in discussion, particularly in an IV situation, maybe in a quick office visit, fine, but in an IV situation, the expectation vitals will be taken, and particularly in cancer patients, it would make sense that vitals would be taken. So again, we have a visit that has been an IV visit where there is no valid chart note for this procedure. I have other...
There is no instance you said it of that.
Talking about, I'm looking at your notes. We accessed for peripheral IV. It was started at the time of continued at that time. There's no other data. There's no data as to what...
What date?
There's no data as to, like...
What date are you looking at?
One of them. Pretty much every, there's one community member that has a vital written in there. I don't know which of the five patients, but pretty much 99% of the nurses notes have no data other than we accessed the vein at this time on this arm and it was discontinued. That's it. That's not a chart note. I don't know what else to say. It's not a chart note and it's never going to be classified as a chart note in four dots. Other chart notes that you have actually made. For example, under the objective section, objective findings are literally that. Your commentary
is under the objective, raw thyroid. Where are you looking? Please cite where you're looking.
Dr. Huebner. So, patient number one was HUBRED-0018.
Yeah, we don't have the date labels on that, Dr. Papil, so that we're not able to.
3621, patient number one. Okay. I don't know what's this. Okay. This is something that I often write, but it's referring to last. And last that we discussed, maybe lying today, but then it turned out that they were going to do on a different day. So very often the patient will say, no, I don't feel like having my blood drawn today, or if they don't have insurance and they want to stay matched, the change of mind is made at the last minute.
It's not an objective finding. They found it a plan, and then we're missing the assessment. So the patient will give an IV, we have no findings in the objective session, we have no assessment provided.
Assessment is given in the previous month. We already know that she has an anal rectal cancer. She would be, as you say, and that is documented previously under A.
Great. That's not in this chart note.
You want A in every chart note then?
Yeah, that's what medicine is providing a soap note for every visit that is provided for a patient, particularly an IV patient who is undergoing cancer therapy. Yeah, I would like an assessment as a plan and an actual objective finding and what's in the IV. I would like an actual chart note done. And like I said, you have all of these patients, you have other practitioners' chart notes. There is a vast difference between these other patients' chart notes and these other practitioners' chart notes and your chart notes. So all I'm asking is, do you understand the vast difference between
the China that is done properly and what you are providing us for chart notes. These are chart notes on your first one, and then from there, it's generally missing one or more pieces each and every time.
This is why I marked for you, because you didn't understand previously that with a procedural, this is only clear. And nobody sat down with the
picture as to what's going on.
I do now. We have spoken one more time to knock it down. He understands, and he's giving you his feedback. Let him finish.
Yeah, I'm really clear as to what you're doing, how you're practicing your chart notes. I particularly also would say, I appreciate your enthusiasm, however, on the same patient, on 3/11/21, the objective, I'm sorry, the assessment is yay progress. Do you ever assess? These are chart notes that should be able to be going to any other practitioner to read and understand, and they have actual FOAP. So yay progress is put it in the plan. We're very happy to see this patient progression and will continue therapy. We're very happy that this patient is able to have themselves cancer free under the plan or under your objective finding of A&O times 3. Yeah, this is just, it's just general basic chart notes, and that's not being followed. And clearly, the course you took in chart noting did not make any difference in how you present your chart.
I would like to respond to that. The course was more relevant to visits that are seldom. When my visits with patients are seldom, the chart notes are detailed, as you can see, especially from the early visits and the times that we sit down, the times that we are not marked procedural visits only. There are times when I don't meet with the patient. That's why I mark it procedural visit only. There was nothing, basically nothing said. It was just a comment in passing from the patient, for example, on 3/8. Just a comment in passing. Furthermore, we remarked on 3/11 where the assessment was yay, progress. That was a footnote, and it was clearly marked SOAMP. That's the one that you cited. A was marked yay, progress in the courses, in the CME that you recommended. This was advocated as a way to acknowledge progress in A. Sometimes you write excellent improvement, I believe is what the speaker said. So I have a habit of sometimes saying yay, progress, because I'm happy for the patient, and that is the assessment for that day. When you meet with a person 3 times a week, as I said, it's not going to get into the kind of detail that's addressed in the course that you advocated that I take, that you presented that I take. And it's just different when you meet with a patient or when a patient comes in for procedures 3 times a week. I don't know how to make that
subjective. There are no changes. The patient is here for treatment today. So then, yes, the subjective is not going to be in-depth and going to have a lot of information. Then your data is, why is the patient spending an hour or 2 hours in our office? They're here for an IV. So what is the objective? Patient A&O times 3. Patient is noting that they're having, you know, give a little bit of feedback, give a little bit of information. Your staff should have at least some basic vitals. At a minimum, you should have an assessment with some actual ICD-10 code. I'm not sure what to say about the class, but there are no chart notes I've ever seen come to my desk from any other physician ever that has anything other than an ICD-10 code under the A P. Yes, that's place for a little bit more liberty in discussion or your commentary on the patient, but the assessment is an ICD-10 code. Maybe the other board members feel differently than me on this, but the assessment is an ICD-10 code, period, end of story. So I'm asking for basic competency, basic levels of chart notes that actually document what was done that day in office, why the patient is there,
what they're receiving, what the assessment is, and what the plan is. The plan could be as simple as IV is above, IV is described above, follow up in 2 days. It's basic charting that is just not happening. And clearly, your opinion of what is should be happening is different than what I would deem a standard SOAP note. So, I'll defer to other board members to ask questions at this point and come back if I have any additional.
Thank you, Dr. Castillo. Dr. Staff, let me drop down to you.
Yeah, I think Dr. Castillo has to say everything that is required by not only medical, but in medical field of health. Yeah, I agree with everything that's been on the top, especially with that assessment. Yeah, you can't just put assessment, yay, a focus. That's not assessment. Assessment is what exactly happened to this patient. I mean, what is the diagnosis? That's what you have to put down. You can't just say yay. And then I noticed that there's a few other chuckles that use it the same thing too. So I definitely agree with the pop view on this. And that's all I need to say.
Dr. Campbell?
No. Ms. Grandma? I mean, I'm just having some sort of disconnect going on here. I'm not sure how to, I'm still mulling over kind of my thoughts, but.
Okay. So my comments in brevity are, I need you to follow a standard SOAP note. I need you to put the patient has et cetera, carcinoma. Whether it is today, IV. The objective, he would be very nice, very helpful for you. He comes from medical legal assessment, whatever it happens to be, sarcoma. And then plan. What did you do with her today? Or him? What did you administer? What were the ingredients of that IV? Then that note is probably done since you're seeing these patients so often. Most likely you'd be able to come up and keep the same note because they were coming in 3 times per week. But as Dr. Cofield said, I need you to follow a standard procedure by drug. If they taught you on where you're at, right, under assessment, then the board should have to look at that class and decide whether that's a class worth sending people to talk to.
I would like to respond to that, please.
You go right ahead.
I did not say that the class says right, yay. I said the class says that if an excellent improvement is your assessment of the day, you can write excellent improvement. As you see, we've already been writing that kind of thing when that was our assessment. Also, taking unrepresentative short start notes from a procedural visit only, in which I did not have a chance to sit down with a patient, and representing them as if that's typical of the department I gave you, is incorrect and misleading. So, if you look through what I gave you, most of the SOAP notes are organized in SOAP note form. However, I am willing, certainly, from this time onward, to put the ICD-10 code in every single assessment. I'm willing to write all the learning capacity, if that is the case, in every single objective. I have no problem doing that, now that I understand that that's what you need to see.
That's what I need to see, and I also need to see, and I'm asking other board members, the other physician board members, if they also want to see what you infused into that patient. So that if that note got transferred to another doctor, they say, oh yeah, he gave 25 grams of IMC, whatever it happens to be.
Excuse me, Dr. Satellite, if I may respond to that, that is the opposite of what you said the last time. What you said the last time was, did you want me to say? What you said the last time was, it is necessary to keep this information on what was on the IV in case the patient has to go to an emergency room.
And Dr. Templeton.
Look, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm going to tell you what we like and what's under the actual medical practice. If the patient goes to the emergency room, if the patient goes to another doctor, if the patient goes to urgent care, whoever infused something into them, that particular receiving clinic or doctor's office needs to know what you infused in them, period. I'm not going to argue with
you. Yes, I agree. As we agreed last time.
And I'm not going to, you know, argue this. And I need a soap note that's done properly. It's brief. That's your problem. It becomes medical legal. However, I want these soap notes done. And they're not, there's no room for argument with this anymore. So I'm gonna kick it back to Dr. Papil, and then we're going to need to wrap this up.
Well, you know, I guess in my opinion, the way I look at this is we've always preferred this one to give Dr. Beaver the opportunity to provide actual chart notes, and that's not happening. So I guess the options, in my opinion, would be to defer once again to that, but, you know, certainly in my opinion, the idea of just, dismissing this case. Clearly, there are issues with the chart notes. Clearly, Dr. Beaver's of the opinion that her IV protocols, that essentially that her chart notes don't have to function as everybody else in the naturopathic community, and that she doesn't have to provide that data in the chart notes like we all of the rest of us do. I want to know what's in the shot. I want to know what's in the IV. I don't care if the patient makes it to the emergency room or not, and you don't have to provide that. And so, as part of the chart notes, I expect, and I know it's expected of me, that what I've infused or what I've injected into that patient has better be documented in the chart now. So, maybe the idea of dismissing the case is not a possibility right now. At this point, I've got two options, which is either defer once again for another 3 months to give them the opportunity to run the chart now, or potentially go into some sort of consent. And we're going to be following up on chart notes and ask them to submit chart notes that meet the requirements that the naturopathic community all has to follow. Those are the two options that I see in the first one.
This is Eva. I have a problem deferring it again because I don't feel like you're getting through and what you're saying fully. So, in my room right now, discussing it, I think that probably needs to be required versus deferred.
Can you elaborate?
Sure. I don't know that she's, I don't hear how perceptive she is to making the necessary alterations that should be basic kind of charting. So I lean more towards maybe a consent agreement versus just deferring for another few months to see who's going to write that. We're discussing this with the board, and I'm sure if the board has questions, we'll be happy to ask you those. And then when we're all done discussing it, if you have something you'd like to add, I'm sure we'd be happy to include that in our discussion as well. But that's my thoughts at the moment. I'm still considering all options, and I'd love to hear what the other board members have to say.
Dr. Karen.
I'm with Ms. Gallen on this, but to me, it seems pretty clear that she is very resistant to including that data in the subnotes, thinking that it only needs to be provided if someone is requesting it later. And so, I don't know my understanding that things like that were required to be in the subnotes, and that's what I'm hearing. And so her resistance to cooperating with that, it just seems like the only option is to go into a consent agreement over this. I don't think deferring it for another 2 months is going to change for anyone else.
Dr. Spatz,
I will do this. And I heard her say that. I hope you heard her say that.
So there's not a resistance to do the soap note to include the things that you've asked her to include, but when you get to the point where not just the substances that are going in the IV, but the formula of the substances, that's what I want you to be really clear about, because I really do believe that fits inappropriately into Dr. Huber's rights under the Trade Secrets Act. I know this is a question that has not been answered. I cannot find a case that this question has been answered. And the Trade Secret Act protects, and it's different than a patent. And I'm letting your lawyer explain to you the difference, but there's a huge difference. And so the proprietary blend of the trade secret, Dr. Huber has worked hard to maintain. And I would imagine that a lot of doctors have worked hard to maintain their formulas and proprietary blends. And so, again, I really want you to be clear with us, your expectations, in my view, your expectations. Dr. Popiel has been very clear, the soap notes. Dr. Sublack has followed that up, and I'm hearing the board with one voice on the soap notes. But I'm not hearing one voice yet on the actual formula. So I'm repeating myself, and I'll be quiet.
So that everyone's clear on formulas versus proprietary, et cetera. It is, if a patient is transferred to any office, we'll take you as an example. If you go to another doctor's office and he says, I don't know what they injected into you because they're telling us proprietary. As a patient, I don't think that you would particularly like not knowing what was done to you procedurally, i.e. in terms of an IV infusion. I have not seen anything, and that's all deferred to Medesta, that says that an IV or a medical procedure is proprietary. And with that, I'll have Medesta clarify it.
If what you're asking, Dr. Butler, like if you'd like to go on to an executive session, I'm happy to entertain any more questions from the board.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Steve. So we'll go on to the second.
All right.
So are you
in?
We'll be back.
Dr. Butler, I need. Excuse me.
Excuse me, did you say the reason why we're moving into executive session?
Legal counsel.
For legal advice?
Legal advice.
Okay, and all those in favor, please?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.